You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
New York City has one of the country's most segregated school systems, one that starts, according to a recent report by the Century Foundation, in preschool. As many students have revealed, school segregation persists not only because of structural discrimination, but also because of the choices that newly gentrifying parents make about where to send their children. This issue is at the center of Lucinda Rosenfeld's latest novel called Class, a satire about Karen Kippel and her family who live in contemporary Brooklyn. It's published by Little Brown. I'm very pleased it has brought her to our show today. Welcome.
Thank you, Leonard. It's great to be on.
How would you describe Karen, your protagonist? She's a bit flawed.
She's flawed. Most of the protagonists in my book are flawed. She is well-meaning. That's how I think of her foremost. She is devoted her life to helping underprivileged children. She's the fundraiser for a nonprofit that helps feed hungry children. And she aspires to live a life, you know, checking her own privilege and helping others, but she is conflicted. And so the choices she makes are often in contradiction to the ideals she holds.
How does she see her role within her daughter's school, the school called Betts?
Well, she sees her role as, you know, she probably flatters herself in thinking that she's bringing, resources to the school, and by having her child in this mixed race, mixed income school, she's, you know, doing a good thing for the larger society. And that for a while sustains her in the school. But since this is a novel, things go wrong, and she begins to doubt her own decisions.
How do her friends and neighbors react to Karen's decision to send her daughter to Betts?
Well, that's sort of the crux of the book, which is that, you have, it's set in a kind of unnamed Brooklyn, as you said, and a lot of the well-meaning, mainly white liberals around her, she sees making very different choices despite their politics. And Karen wants to keep it real and live up to her politics and her values. But she feels threatened, I guess you could say, by her friends that send their children to all white schools, which are something that they basically are in Brooklyn, and even her friends who send their children to private school. We're talking about, professional class, white, middle class, upwardly mobile people here. I'll admit right now, inspired by my own experiences as a public school parent living in the heart of the liberal bubble.
Well, I'd like to quote a little bit from the book about this. Quote, defending her daughter's school to college-educated white liberals in the neighborhood who were zoned for Betts but who didn't send their children there on account, Karen assumed, of the number of black and brown faces they saw in the schoolyard had become her second obsession after online shopping. do you think that, I know people make fun of Brooklyn these days,
yes,
but this is something that could occur all over the country in many cities. But do you think that Brooklyn in particular, because of the way it's change from being a borough not of choice to a borough of choice?
I think that the scenario I'm describing in the book is something you'll see probably all over the country, in Oakland or D.C. or Chicago, any number of places where you had these inner cities that were, left by professional class people for many decades, and then they returned and decided to raise families in these locations, and these populations find themselves, sharing the public schools or somewhat sharing the public schools with people of very small means who have been there generationally for, many decades. And so you have this clash of economics and of values. And, I mean, the book was... My ambition in writing the book was to explore what happens when you have these very well-meaning white liberals, uber liberals, who are, you know, ranting and raving about the Republicans and blah, blah, blah. And then they're, you know, confronted with how to live their own lives. And unfortunately, and people don't like to talk about this, and that was sort of my one of my aims of the novel was to, you know, see how white liberals struggle to integrate themselves with disadvantaged populations and also often refuse to send their own children to schools with, to put it very bluntly, poor black and Hispanic children.
After you wrote the book, I'm sure, that story came out about the uproar over the zoning changes in two schools in Brooklyn that would have resulted in integrating them.
Yes.
Did you feel justified?
It was funny. I was finishing the I had just finished The Galley, or I can't remember where in the process, but the book was basically done when that story came out. And it was
but
very
then you
strange.
Read the parents' objections.
Yes, I did, and it sounded very familiar. It was one of those weird things where it felt like art imitating life. And, I mean, what I wanted to explore in the book is that there's this impulse when it comes to your own children, I think. It's very primal. You want to protect them and do what's best for them. And and I think that applies to mothers and fathers. And that, you know, can clash with, you know, ideals you may have that may be dear to you.
Sarah Lyle, who gave your novel a rave review in the New York Times, noted that although your title is class, it's just as preoccupied with race. One of the children in your novel, Jay Dean, seems to set a few things in motion at the school. Can you talk about what happened?
Sure. I call him Jaden.
I don't want to give away any spoilers.
I refer to him as Jaden, yes, although he has a strange spelling of his name. So Jaden was, and I'll just put it blunt, he was inspired by an actual, he's in a way the most autobiographical part of the book. He was inspired by a child in my older daughter's second and third grade class who had obvious potential to be a lovely human being. He was perfectly smart, and he was actually quite sweet to my daughter, but he had this violent streak, and no one knew what at the school knew what to do about him, basically. And he apparently had no parents on the scene. He lived with a relative. There was possible domestic child abuse going on. And if anything inspired me to write the book, it was probably the real-life character, the person that inspired the character
of
Jaden.
Should I assume that you and your husband had similar reactions to Karen and her husband, Matt, in the book? In the way you interpreted the situation?
Well, like Karen, I mean, I don't want...
And Jaden's actions?
Yes, I don't want readers to think I'm Karen. Karen is a kind of an exaggeration of all the insane and neurotic and conflicted ideas that run through the head of a well-meaning, nice, middle-aged, white, liberal mother.
Who's afraid that her husband is going to see her as racist for
yes.
wanting to pull her daughter from the public school that they've decided to send her to.
Yes, I had personally, to the person that inspired the character Jaden, I did have a variety of emotions. I remember when I heard about the fact that this child was both threatening his classmates and also, you know that being threatened at home and looking for, possibly even looking for a new home. I remember the second grade teacher telling me very quietly about the situation, and he sort of became the pariah of the grade, and all the parents would stand around, especially the middle class parents, and say, this kid has to go, he's awful, you know, something has to be done. And then I would agree, I'd hear myself agreeing, but I also thought, oh, it's so sad, and you know, no one knew what to do with him, because my understanding of the public school system is that, you know, there's special ed, but there's nowhere to send children who have behavioral problems on that level. There's not an obvious place to send them. And I do believe in the idea of public schools as places that everyone can be educated. You know, charter schools have the ability to so-called counsel out students and stuff, and I find that fairly distasteful. So I thought, well, Jaden should stay, but then I also thought, I mean, the child who inspired Jaden, but I also thought, you know, I'm scared. I'm scared that this child is going to hurt my daughter. He actually always liked my daughter. and invited her over for a play date once. I remember his aunt invited her over, and I had another of those moments where I thought, can I, you know, Uber brownstone liver, go to a housing project for a play date? That is not in the book, but I didn't resolve that one.
I'm speaking with Lucinda Rosenfeld, who is the author of a number of novels, the Pretty One, I'm So Happy for You, and What She Saw. Her fiction and essays appeared in the New York Times Magazine, The New Yorker, Creative Nonfiction, Slate.com, many other magazines. And her latest novel is Class. It is published by Little Brown. So how does she go about transferring her daughters out of that school into another school?
Well, I don't want to give too much of the plot away, but basically, like many people in New York City, she plays the system. It was Bloomberg who introduced the idea of school choice, and you don't have to go to your zoned school. No matter what you think of that, Karen looks at the options around her, and even the options available under Bloomberg's school choice program are not good enough, and she reacts on fear and wants to get her daughter into the all-white affluent school, and she goes about this illegally, which is the sort of beginning of her spiral into slight madness. The book was inspired again by my own experiences as a public school parent, and I have heard about people lying about where they live. So it wasn't that far. That part of the story is not far-fetched. The way she goes about it is somewhat far-fetched.
Well, Karen also seems to have a troubled relationship with food. She has a history of neurotic eating.
That food is really like the secondary but just as almost as important theme of the book. I'm fascinated with food. I'm fascinated with the politics around food. Of course, I grew up in the 70s and 80s, which, of course, were kind of a mass-marketed wasteland food-wise. And I think around the 90s, I started to notice that food had taken on this kind of, like, class status as it had become a class issue, I guess you could say. I'm not a foodie myself, so I never fully got on that bandwagon, but I bought into it to a certain extent. And
it comes out of it's what has led to the success of things like Whole Foods, and,
yes,
and then the farmers markets have become a major phenomenon.
Absolutely.
In New York and elsewhere.
Yes, I think it's become across the board an obsession of the upper classes. So in a school like my fictional school, Betts, you have this huge clash of at lunchtime where the poor children are eating the Sloppy Joes in the school cafeteria for free, and the affluent, mainly white children are eating their seaweed snacks and their organic Applegate turkey sandwiches or whatnot. So I was fascinated the way that food has become this huge dividing line, especially in the kind of mixed race income school I describe in the book. But it's also in the book, it's even more complicated because Karen herself works at a hunger relief charity. So food for her is this thing that is, food is a good thing. And yet she also struggles with, she struggles as well because her daughter is slightly overweight. And so it's completely complicated in her head of, good food, bad food, constantly, she's constantly fighting with herself about what constitutes good food. Is it any food or is it only food of a certain purity level?
Is satire your natural genre?
I think this is the...
Is that the way your mind works?
I think that, I grew up writing...
this couldn't have been a realistic novel, even though it deals with real issues.
Yeah.
And we're seeing it played out right now, even in Cabinet Choice.
Yes. That's the second... I'll answer that second.
Betsy DeVos and all the arguments about whether she's an appropriate... we'll make an appropriate education secretary.
Yes. Well, I'll start with satire.
We're running
out of time. Satire is probably my natural genre. I came around to it sort of sideways. I always thought I'd write about contemporary mores, but actually this book sort of fulfills my desire to write satire, and I think I'm going to continue in this tradition. As for DeVos, as others have pointed out, I don't think she's ever been inside a public school, so it's kind of an odd choice of public education secretary. I will say no more than that since I think we're running out of time. But
my guest has been Lucinda Rosenfeld. Her latest book is Class. It is published by Little Brown. Thank you so much for being on
the show. Thank you, Leonard.